Surprise! Hi, my name is Beth. I'm an alcoholic. Well, I'd like to say I'm honored and privileged, but right now I'm freaking the hell out. But I'm so glad to get to be here today. And there's a room full of people who could have told their story. You know, so a little bit of my background. I grew up in an alcoholic home, but I went, the alcoholic home and I was living. My parents divorced when I was a baby. I was born near Dallas. My mother had custody of me, and her family was alcoholic, her granddaddy. And at 7, I went off to live, and there was also a lot of addicts, and there was a lot of turmoil and fight and war in the family, a lot of mixed messaging and things like that. I was very deeply ingrained in spiritual malady and did not know. You know, I was born like in the spiritual infirmary and thought I was like a nurse's helper, something like that. I went off to live with my father at the age of 7. And so there were three kids, or I had two brothers. I have two brothers, and the older one and I, we left, and my mother kept my youngest brother. He's a heart patient. Part of his of the experience with him comes back into play in my story, because later when I came into recovery, I looked back at my relationship with a power greater than myself a lot. You know, a lot of us go back and do that. Up until the age of 7, even though there was a lot of chaos and turmoil, like I at least bought into the illusion that life was good. You know, I bought into it, and that was pretty cool. Things changed abruptly. It took, like the first morning that I woke up with my dad, you know, at his house, I asked him, Mom's going to come get me later today, right? And he said, she didn't tell you, you're here for good. So at that point, you know, I think I cried for like a year. And had my older brother, and he wasn't very sympathetic. I mean, he was going through the same stuff as me. Like, so many things in my story and his story are interesting because we came from the same nest. He's been to prison twice. He's off of parole, man. He's doing better than he's ever done. He's one of us. He definitely is. So my way to get about in life growing up with my, you know, single dad and my brother was, I learned pretty early on, in order to make the chaos stop, I had to figure out, like, what was the game plan? Because my dad, he was a raging alcoholic. He didn't rocket off into his alcoholism as bad as he would later. I mean, he was pretty bad at the time. But I come to figure out, if I could figure out what things pissed him off and, like, what things to take care of, then I wouldn't get in trouble. It made sense, you know? And I can honestly say today that later on in life, those things that were like really scary or things that like felt like defect kind of level kind of things has made it where I can assess the situation. I can figure things out, but I can do it in a fashion that's healthy. And so I've like through step work over the years, it's turned into something that works a lot better. You know, it happens to be something that's handy and a strength. You know, I smoked pot for the first time when I was 8, I found a joint in this abandoned, or maybe not abandoned truck, it was unlocked and open. Shit, you don't do that around East Austin with a kid like me. One of our greatest pastimes was running from the cops. We just loved it. And, you know, we got to be wild and crazy. And once I kind of got situated into the new environment with life with my father, there were a lot of freedoms. There were a lot of good things that he taught me. He taught me to be self-empowered. He would come home and catch me, you know, he'd figure out that I'd been playing with power tools because I was trying to, actually, I was trying to make a gift for my mother. And he was like, oh no, don't use that. That's dangerous. Here, you know, show me. He had a hand drill, hand crank drill where I could use it and just different things. But he started teaching me how to do things when he saw that, you know, those were my interest sets. He really encouraged like my doing well in school. And so I learned if I made good grades, you know, and I took care of my chores, that I'd stay off the radar. And I didn't know, I mean, checking the time. I don't want to spend too much time in this past section. I stole a bootleg bottle of whiskey from him at one point. He was selling them. He was bootlegging. He had a case of them. You know, we were in East Austin and I ran off with it and drank some. Oh, and then I threw it over the hill down to the river. And I went back a day later, had to have some more of that, you know, just different little dabbling with stuff. Later in high school, you know, all the partying was going on and I would go with my best friend and we'd kind of go and hang out, but I was always afraid of, turning into what I grew up with. And so I wanted to go and have fun and wanted to be part of, and you know, I lived out in the country with a whole bunch of hillbilly boys, my brother's friends, and they would skate into town and stuff. And, you know, we would mess with them at parties, and I really did try to hang back and stick back. But my senior year, I started to miss a lot of school, and it was mainly, you know, hanging out with my boyfriend and party, and I'd smoke, but I wouldn't, man, I was really afraid if I picked up, you know, much alcohol that I would become an alcoholic. And sidebar is I'd already had a really cool blackout drunk where I woke up and vomit. You know, I just, anytime I had a chance to even touch it, I went all for it. And so I was really careful to be like in a safe setting and a safe surrounding if I did. And so I graduated high school, and not much later after that, and I'm like a half credit away from honors. I kept putting my classes down. The only reason they let me go with all the absences I had was my whole senior class was so damn bad. The school didn't want to look, they didn't want to look bad. They took the money penalty, and so they didn't have so many kids not graduate that year. And I became a single mom probably when my daughter was almost two. And crap, I left out the protest. I did have a big blast of fun. Like between graduating and having my first kid, there was a hemp protest. You know, we were camping on the law enforcement center's front yard. It started small and it got really big, and it was to legalize hemp. But really, you know, we were all smoking, and it was really cool. It was quite a thrill. We got raided by the cops, and they came out there, and you know, they're trying to find our stuff, and we knew how to hide it. And singing them back into the building with a Buffalo Springfield song, you know, just this like short burst of, you know, me trying to stretch out and actually stretch my wings out. And actually I'd had a plan to take off tour in the country with these hippies. But I got pregnant and I just saw, you know, my life was, I needed to settle down, and everyone kept on partying and going. So my disease really wasn't in full swing. I wasn't able to do the things like I wanted to do. Well, I started dating a kind of sweetheart from high school. We ended up getting married and this guy, we were band nerds together, and he was a grade before me, but I was only a month older, and man, safe, and I could drink. And I've skipped out on a couple of things. I'm not there yet. My mother was an addict, and her thing was opioids, and her hometown was a dry county for the longest time. That family background, I used to get to go see family for a month in the summer and see what their life was like. They'd drive an hour to get alcohol, and so, you know, there were like meth cookhouses and things around, and my aunt would tell me, you notice that smell? Yeah, that's what's going on, you know, or just stuff. In the East Austin days, before we got out of there, there was also a lot of crazy stuff where I could see the things that people did when they were like really loaded, really high on various drugs. And I really, really had a scare put in me about that stuff, but I thought I was safe to drink. And I got, you know, I got engaged, I got married, and I was pregnant with my second child, which is Savannah. And like my, you know, I was 22 when I got married. It was, you know, I started to drink some, and I drank like an alcoholic. I would drink in the daytime, but then I'd like knock it off and get all scared and freaked out. And it was like wine or something like that. And then I had my third child, which is my son Lance. And, you know, after he was born, I took off. I mean, I was home and all that good stuff, but my drinking career really blasted off. And my ex, he was in the military out there at Fort Hood. That stuff is so cheap. I mean, you can get your hands on it. And so like, I think about, a lot of times I think about my story is so much like this, the housewife who drank at home, where she'd drag out the vacuum cleaner and then, you know, plan to do this stuff, but all she'd do is get loaded and get it put back up. Like, I really started to isolate from people that I knew. My computer's doing its own thing, like it might cut off. Crap, don't do it. I've just moved it so the fan can cool off. And that went on for a while, and I had a point where, you know, so I'm drinking, and we moved back, got out of the military, came back home, and moved onto my father's property. And that's when I really let my drinking let loose, because, you know, I was back in my hometown where I'm safe. I had my, you know, I was married, so I thought I was safe with that, but I knew something was really not right. And I was trying to manage and control stuff. And those were the days where it got the darkest. Like I would, I'd have to have shots of whiskey before my coffee would finish. It might've been scotch, somebody, whatever. I know the brands. I'd have a big giant damn bottle, and you know, and there'd be a little bit missing, or a little few inches away from the bottom, and then I'd finish it off in a day, in a given day, and then I'd say, oh shit, I'm gonna get busted. Let me go back and get some more, and I'd drink it down so it looked kind of like the one that had been there. It to me, it was so obvious what I was up to. And I managed to quit drinking, which took, I had a spiritual advisor, and she called me out, and I managed to quit. I had to taper down, like at night. I went to my ex and I was like, I need to have at least a beer, because I was shaking too damn bad, you know, for a couple of days until I could like get past it. And so I went into this like phase of being able to not drink for 2 years and 9 months. And I had a lot of prayer involved. I had my higher power involved. I'm checking the time. But I didn't have the 12 steps, and I didn't understand the threefold nature of the disease. And short and long of it is, you know, 2 years, 9 months later, you know, by that time I'd had a, crap, I'm mixing up timelines. Bear with me, I'll continue. Somewhere in the mix of the time frame, I had a miscarriage. I had a miscarriage after I had quit at one point, and looking at like the age of the one that I lost, I would have been drinking when I was pregnant, though I did not know it. And I asked the doctor, is that what the, you know, what caused it? And they wouldn't say, and they didn't know. So later when I got pregnant again, this was Elijah, my last one. A friend gave me a drink. I was, can you hear Kelsey? Got stuck in driving mode. Well, my gosh. Yeah, I'm not the best at storytelling, so I'm gonna, but I mean, at the same time, I'm going to move this because I actually do have some gifts, and they might come through. Okay. So, managed to quit for 2 years and 9 months, and not in the program, had the newborn baby. I had a certain spiritual awakening working with this lady I'd worked with for a long time. Basically what would be like a sponsor before I came into having a sponsor, she helped me. One of the biggest pieces was she had a connection with a power greater than herself, and she was able to let that flow through her to me. And it resonated, so much. And the times when I would like, and I went off the radar with her, like when I, you know, when I did pick back up, I went off the radar, because I, you know, I'm spiritually unfit. I can't stand to be around, you know, people that are connected if I'm spiritually unfit. But, you know, so I'd had my thing come along. That happens when it says in the book that, your time and place will come, you know, without, there, you know, we have no effective mental defense against picking up that first drink. You know, we'll have these peculiar mental blank spots. And without me being exposed to 12-step recovery or any of that, that's exactly what happened. And, you know, even, you know, any connection with the power greater than myself that I had, I just couldn't tap into that. So I bottomed out, and never was drinking first thing in the morning again. Like I always really tried to wait till 5, not always wait till 5, and weekends didn't count. You know, noon was good, but, I went on with that and all the different varieties of trying to manage and control, like sometimes it's the weekends only and all that list and all that crap. And, you know, and I hit my bottom when I was by myself with the kids. I was still married, and my then husband was out of state, and he ended up being gone for an entire 6 months. And 3 months into that, because he was working out of state and making money, 3 months into that, I just really finally got into that break point. I would, at the time it looked like binge drinking, because I could get a couple of days, you know, and then I would just go off, and anybody who knew me at that time would have said, hey, that's binge drinking. But I knew what was really happening was I was trying to manage and control, and I was trying to solve. I was fucking miserable. Not only was I just completely miserable, hating myself for being that way, and I didn't know, you know, like I had no idea. I thought it was me. I think it was a God thing that I invited my little brother out. You know, back then he didn't have internet and he wanted to use the internet at my house, and we hung out for a bit, and it got late, and he said he just spent the night on the couch. And the next day I went and I showed him my bottle. I was like, dude, look. And he's like, how did you do that? Like, you didn't even seem that drunk. And I was like, yeah, I know. It's why I'm showing you. And I'd already looked up meetings and I'd already looked up help and whatever. And I didn't have anybody to watch the kids that I felt safe. I had lost my mom to her addiction, probably at that time, 10 months or a year before, something like that. And, the only thing I will say about her with that was, they did an autopsy, and it was oxycodone was nearly lethal, but not quite. Like, all of her life, it was speckled. She lost her nursing license 2 times, and it just kind of give a little idea. Hang on a second. Hot tea. So he told me I'd pulled the mom, and I was like, yeah, dude, I know, you know, and we were accustomed to looking like we were okay. When you know how to act, when you know how to put it on, I still have, you know, that's, you know, I know how to look okay when I'm not. And that's why I deliberately showed him. And here's the God moment thing, or the God relationship thing. He's the one that my mother had kept. He's the one who was my younger brother. He was a heart patient. He was born. He turned blue instantly. So they knew he needed open heart surgery. And back when I had left my mother when I was 7, one of the things that made me hold on was him, you know, and like when I get into recovery, and they were talking about relationship with your higher power. And I got thinking back. And I remember hating the fact that I wasn't going to be the baby. And, you know, I mean, at first I was excited. I'm going to be a big sister. And then it got old and everybody kept carrying on about the baby. And I got kind of pissed and I just sulked. And then when he didn't come home, you know, that's when I was praying, God save my brother. God save my brother. And so, you know, I know that I had like remorse kind of thing. I know that I had some conscience. I know that I was praying back when I was that small. And to me, it matters, you know, because I've seen a lot of people not have any idea whatsoever. I've seen people have an experience when they were young that went the other way, where something happened and they were pissed at God forevermore, or higher power, you know, universe, whatever. But for me, it was something that I needed that. So anyway, so there's that thing with him, and I just needed somebody to see and to not just be so chicken shit to say, yeah, you're fucked up, you know, he gave that to me. And I said, well, he said, what about going to a meeting or something? Mom used to have to go, you know, and I was like, yeah, let me go call. I already looked the other day and called once, and I'd hung up on the answering machine. And so he watched the kids so I could get to my first meeting. It was the wildest thing that I had ever seen, because everyone was really happy to see me in that state, you know, and it was, I've told people before when they all said, you know, when I said my name is Beth and they said, hi, Beth. And I thought of Finding Nemo where they say, hi, Bruce. It was a shell shock. I was like, what the hell is going on? But everyone that shared, you know, that just that unconditional love, that spirit, that, you know, loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. I had never been accepted and been okay in the midst of like my mess that way. And man, I struggled, you know, I came and they told me to keep coming back no matter what. And it's super good because I turn around and relapse whatever. It's not like I was clean. And I struggled to stack some days together. But if I had not been told that, I would have just stayed away. And there was something there, you know, the people telling me about the things they did that I would never admit to anybody, you know, and then just encouraging me to keep on coming. And you gotta, you know, and I took a book home from my first meeting, and within 3 days I found a sponsor. I didn't know who it was. I was calling the women's names. And I met up with a lady. We started doing the work, and she put my butt to work big time. Like, she really got after it with me, and it was cool. Gave me a strong start. I don't really want to say too much about like the moments of relapse. I have said before, it took me 29 months to get a 1-year chip I was kind of slow to catch on. I think that in so many ways, rehab would have been just so helpful. And at the same time, I just, this is my path, this is my story. But I definitely got to see in real time, in real action, you know, okay, this was my mental obsession again. Okay, this is where I'm dragging on my step work. You know, it was 1, 2, 3, those first three steps I had to do a lot. I was trying to get my fourth step done when I was having the relapses, and it just got into kicking gear and doing all that stuff. My ex came back that 3 months later. Our marriage still lasted for a little while. And, I know that when things were getting rocky and coming apart, there was a lot of financial hardship within our family here at the house. You know, he'd been laid off and I'd been a stay-at-home mom all that time. Our air conditioner had broken and we didn't have money to fix it. And I'm still going to meetings. Well, hell yeah, I'm still going to meetings. Like, I'm trying to save my damn life. 3 months into going to meetings, I found my dad dead. That was shocking and traumatic. And I made it 3 days without drinking on that. It's one of those things that, you know, sometimes those things happen. But I had people to go to. I actually, first thing I did was I've got to get to a meeting, you know, and next day I hurried up and got my butt down there and I told them, and I really got that firsthand experience of this thing happened. And instead of drinking, I came and talked to these people and I had that experience of, this is where we take it up. This is where we take it up. I know before things really came unraveled with my ex and myself that, I was starting to get practice at like how 10 steps are done and like how they're not done. And, you know, when we're wrong, we promptly admit it. And I was trying to do the steps to the best of my my ability. And, I came to understand that sometimes he wasn't the person to admit it to, because he would use it to beat me up. Family dynamics shift and change. And essentially the short and long of it is he was so afraid of losing me that he really worked his way into it. God bless him. That's sad. And it really changed our path. I had heard it said not to make a major decision in your first year of recovery, like, you know, dating or breaking up or whatever. I was one of those people that I really was so desperate to get on to having a new path and a new life that I kept trying like hell, trying to stay sober, then out there drinking, you know, and that was that tradition one taking place right in front of me. And it's huge. And coming up on a year sober, coming up on my 1 year birthday, like through all of that other mayhem, and trying to live this thing one day at a time, but man, from that first sponsor, from 3 days in, like I was 3 days in and I got her, she told me to do my on awakening. She told me to do step 3, step 7 prayers. She told me to get my butt to meetings. She told me to talk to people every day. And I got to doing those things and doing them regularly. And I swear, man, if you read that stuff, you start figuring out like, oh, this is pointing me to this part. This is, you can't help but not learn how to work the program, you know, and if they're running you through all the other steps, and then you like turn a page back. Oh shit, this is step 10. You know, you just, so things came unraveled. I saw it going down. I reached out to my spiritual advisor lady that I used to have. And she gave me a couple of prayers to pray and then kind of like turned her back and was like, man, I'm not going to touch that. That's your stuff. You got to figure out, you know, what. And so I was seeking guidance from a higher power. I really was having a hard time seeing the truth right in front of me of how much trouble was happening at home. But the one thing I held on to was, I know to do this in the morning. I know to do this throughout the day. I know to do this in the evening. You know, I did not have to fucking drink through all that shit. And I also was able to be present for my family, for my kids. My phone is stuck in driver mode, so all I can see is this blue circle flashing at me. I can't see anyone. So this is really awkward, but I had been a stay-at-home mom for like all those years. In totality, I was married 14 years, but the last year's worth was going through the divorce and all that jazz, and still in, you know, like the, I got my 1 year sobriety mark, and that was November of that year. And I didn't ask him to leave the house until January. I had no job. I had, I had lost my dad right in that time. Well, my grandparents had written me into the will, and then my grandfather died, and there was going to be money for me to be able to make it for a little bit. And all I knew was people told me, if you keep your sobriety first, everything else will be first class. And I thought about it, and I was like, I'm taking these actions. I'm trusting God. I can't just tell my kids, hey, I'm trusting God, we're going to be okay. It's like, they're going to need to see, like, are my feet on the ground? And so for me, what that meant was I had to put everything into it. Got to helping other people, got essentially and eventually, a couple of different jobs and kids in school. And man, there's a lot of years past, because it's like I'm coming up on my 11 year mark. A lot of life things happening, kids graduating high school. I have only, like, my last one's a senior. I'm like, what the hell? They were like between 15 and 5 when I started this stuff. And I've been too busy putting one foot in front of the other and keeping up with my own step work, different people that I've sponsored over the years. That's so huge, to make time, to squeeze in time. But to do it because, just the growth and the changes, it's huge. I've had to, one of my kids, I have to communicate with them when all that stuff's going on. Hey man, I'm sorry that I know that they're taking a lot of time with me away from you. And the youngest one, the one who actually communicates with me about like his feelings or whatever, he's like, it really sucked, but I had to, but I understand now, to where, they've seen and known some of these ladies and some of them, it's been like really good relationships built just by seeing my kids and passing come to work together. But, man, I see all kinds of people, with all kinds of different angles of approaches of work in the program. And people who try it and just get back up and try and keep pushing forward, man, it's beyond belief how incredible it is. It really does work. I think my way is best. what the hell is that? I love watching other people pick it up and catch it and get working with it. And what I can say, and it's really just blown me away beyond belief, is, I just wanted to get some relief from the pain I was feeling back at that time when I came in to try to get sober. I became the kind of mom that I always wanted to be and did not know how to do it. And there are so many things in life. People are telling me, you need to be like this, or you need, do like that, go be successful, whatever. And I'm like, I could intellectually comprehend, like, yes, that's a good thing to do. Or like my spiritual advisor lady, she said, I needed to learn she had a different client who had a magnet that said, I can't, God can, let him, on, magnet on her fridge. The words got progressively bigger. And she said, you need one of those. And I was like, sounds like a great idea. But I was like, how do you do that? And it's living in the program, living in the steps, living in 10, 11, and 12. If I'm walking along and I'm like, oh, this is something I could have done better. Like, I already know, tomorrow, next time I run into this, how to do it differently. And that's from practice. Okay. This is 8:18, and I, had no, plan of doing this ahead of time, but you guys, I'm sure I'll think of things that I wish I had thrown in here. But I'm going to go ahead and call it a wrap and see if I can get this thing out of driving mode so I can see all the faces again. But thank you. If your hands are full and you're busy or whatever is going on in your life, man, you can, I believe people can do this if they try. Moms can do this if they try. So yeah, that's it.
Man, Beth, on the fly. Amazing. Yeah, great job, Beth.
Yeah, you did great.
Nice job, Beth. Thank you.
On short notice, too.
Good job, Beth.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah. Did me a world of good, too, you know?